Hey, brother.
You know, I was actually just listening to that song, funny enough, about 20 minutes ago. So the irony of that is strong. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the podcast that still doesn't have a name. So today we're going to call it the V. Stiviano Podcast
Yes.
with your hosts, I can't even say my own name,
I think
Dan
you're drunk.
McDonald and Paul Almeida. Today we're going to kick off as we usually do with some hockey talk. And Paul, I'm going to launch right into it. No one, as we talked about in our last podcast, gives Montreal a snowball's chance in Tahiti of coming back in this. But they played well, I thought, in game two. I mean, they should 40 shots
They
on the
tried
Rangers.
very hard.
They got a gold star for effort. They managed 40 shots on Henrik Lundqvist, and you know, after the game, everyone from Michel Therrien to PK Subban to George, the poutine maker down the road from the Bell Center, was talking about how Lundqvist stole the show. And I mean, is that something that you agree with? Was that the Habs game, and Lundqvist just stole it?
Well, I think their only hope in hell is to take a lot of shots and hope that their shooting percentage goes up. But PK Subban did not say Henrik Lundqvist stole the show. PK Subban, quote unquote, said to the media, "Henrik should be called Henrik Luckquist."
Is that well, those were his exact words?
Yeah, he
Oh,
should.
PK, you do yourself no favors.
He got lucky, is what he said, and I don't think Henrik will mind at all. He will get lucky all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals if that's what's happening. But no, he didn't get lucky. He's top five goalie in the league, and the Canadians don't have their goalie, their
Yeah.
player.
Well, exactly. I mean, they've got something called a Dustin Tokarski, which, if I remember correctly, is best known for that Pierre Maguire clip where Pierre, basically O's when he makes that save during the World
Oh.
Junior Championships. But I thought that Tokarski was pretty good in game two.
He was all right. He did exactly what you expect a rookie first-time goalie to do in the playoffs. You know, make some saves, take a second to get into the game, but eventually lose it.
Oh, man. But the most irritating narrative going into that game was all I heard about from everyone in the media was about how Tokarski could come in and pull a Ken Dryden, as though like pulling a Ken Dryden, stepping in as a rookie goaltender, and taking your team to a Stanley Cup is something that happens every friggin' year.
How unfair is that
I
to
know.
Karski? Hey, no pressure at all, but we expect you to be Ken Dryden.
Exactly. I mean, the last time that I can think of that happening would probably have to be Cam Ward back in 2006 with the Hurricanes. I mean, it's not something that happens every year. Just because he's a Canadian doesn't mean it's gonna happen. Like, I don't know. That was a bit frustrating, I thought.
How frustrating is it to be a Bruins fan right now?
In what sense?
That they got beat in game seven. They probably should have won that series. If you're looking at it through just numbers, they won the President's Trophy. They should have. And if they won, now they get knocked out of the playoffs, and the team that beat them is putting up zero fight because they don't have a goalie.
Well, yeah, but I mean, look, the Bruins were the inferior team in that series, and frankly, I'm not gonna cry over any Boston spilt milk, but look, I think that for Montreal right now, it has been night and day, and I don't know if it was an emotional letdown. I think game one was an emotional letdown. Game two, I mean, they outplayed them, but I'm still waiting for something from Thomas Vanek, from David Desharnais, from Max Pacioretty, from PK, frankly. PK, he's playing a lot of minutes, but he hasn't really got much in the way of goal scoring chances, has he?
No, he doesn't. And Thomas Vanek is their superstar acquisition at the deadline. Hasn't done anything either. And he's at the fourth line at practice, which I don't know if that's a message from Therrien or what do you do? You can't sit him. How do you sit Thomas Vanek in the press box?
Well, no, exactly. You can't. I mean, look, it doesn't look like he's going. I remember at the start of the playoffs, Montreal fans were talking about how they were clamoring to re-sign him in the offseason. And now, I mean, it looks like they're clamoring to ship him out of town in a wooden box. Like, the man
Such is
has
the case
no.
in Montreal.
Exactly. The man has no collateral there right now. But quickly before we transitioned over, my last question on this series to you is something that I've really noticed through the first two games. And I'm not sure if it's something that is a narrative that's being picked up on entirely, but setting aside the 4 points he had in game one, I really think that this series has shown off the kind of defenseman Ryan McDonagh has become. And I honestly think that he's become a top 10 defenseman in the league. Oh. What are your thoughts on that?
I think he is getting on the radar for the first time for a lot of people. I think a lot of people think, when they think big defensemen that you want to start a team around, you think Keith, Weber, Chara, Doughty, Suter, all those. Some people might even put Phaneuf up there. I take Phaneuf out of the top 10 if he's in there, and McDonagh easily goes in. He's easily in the top 10. I mean, those are the top 5. I think you can't really argue with those. But the next 5 are up for debate. Whether PK's up there in the top 5 is another thing.
I mean, with McDonagh, I look at him as being on the same level as guys who right now are considered Norris Trophy candidates every year. A guy like Alex Pietrangelo, I see McDonagh as being on par with him, and he gets plaudits every year.
Okay, who is your top 10? Let's go. We got Keith, we got Chara. I don't know about the order, but just the top 10. Keith, sure. Weber, Suter, Doughty, Carlson, yeah. Pietrangelo, Subban, McDonagh, and Jason Garrison. No.
You know what? Actually, I agree with every single one of those ones that you put in there. I'd say for number 10 right now, I mean, we don't have a lot of time to talk about it. I would probably lean... You said Victor Hedman. That's not a bad choice, I don't think.
Mostly because
right
I can't think of anyone.
Yeah, I'm going through in my mind right now, and I can't think of anyone I would think is better than him or had a better season than him. Oliver Ekman-Larsson maybe would be a guy to consider.
Yeah.
Who else? Shattenkirk maybe too, but you know, Cronwall. It's an evolving conversation though.
Chris Letang maybe on a good year.
Yeah, maybe. Well, certainly last year, but I think McDonagh's a guy who warrants inclusion in that conversation for sure.
Yes, he does. So switching over to the other series then. In LA and Chicago. Chicago was a period away from a 2-0 series lead.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, look, I mean, a 2-0 series lead would have, against any other team, would have been insurmountable. But this Kings team has shown to be unflappable, right? But it looked to me that what happened is the Kings got a couple power plays and they executed, and Corey Crawford looked remarkably pedestrian. And I mean, everyone was talking about him being the Conn Smythe favorite, about him being, you know, the most underrated player in human history. And, you know, it was, you know, it's all I heard. And then he allows 5 goals, including a hat trick in one period to Jeff Carter. So it was a remarkable fall from grace, but I mean, you can't blame Crawford entirely. It wasn't entirely his fault, but certainly he did not play well in that third period, nor did the defense in front of him.
Well, I think you go back to the second period for the turning point of the game. Chicago up 2-0, and 2-on-1 for the Hawks. Brent Seabrook gets robbed by Johnny Quick on a wide-open net. Would have made it.
That's right.
Would have made it 3-0. Kings go back the other way, make it 2-1.
Yeah,
so say what you want about Crawford, but I think Quick turned the game around for them. And if you look on Bet365 now, because of that one game, the Stanley Cup favorite is the New York Rangers.
They're the favorite now.
They're at 2.5. Blackhawks 2.87. Kings at 3.5. Get your bets in for your Western Conference team.
Yeah, that's some remarkably optimistic numbers they're giving the Rangers there. But look, I mean, you and I have said kind of all along that the Western Conference winner is going to be the Stanley Cup winner. I see no reason to think otherwise, although the Rangers have looked like a good systems team. And there's something to be said for the fact that Alain Vigneault knows how to play against the Chicago Blackhawks and knows how to play against the LA Kings. Not necessarily win against the LA Kings, but, you know, play against them. So, you know, the Rangers will put up a fight, but I think the Western Conference winner is, I mean, you got to think they're the favorites.
Yeah. I mean, I said Chicago in 6. I stand by that. They have to lose 2 games to get to 6. So I say Chicago in six still, and then I pick them to win. So
that's fair.
Yeah. Jeff Carter.
Yeah.
Becoming a premium winger in the National Hockey League.
Well, Jeff Carter, it's funny, I think, with him. He's an in-and-out kind of guy. You got to remember, this is a guy that was on Team Canada at the Olympics.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he has the pedigree, and he has the notoriety. But I do always feel like, you know, he's left out of conversations when you're talking about elite players. I think that he has elite release. His pace isn't always there, and he seems to take nights off sometimes. But, I mean, the stats don't lie. He was a top player for them in 2012 in their run. He was a top scorer for them last year when they made it to the conference finals, and 4 points last night, 3 goals on 5 shots in limited ice time. Mm-hmm. And you got to remember, he's playing with Toffoli and Pearson, the rookies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's second in league scoring in the playoffs now behind his teammate Kopitar. I think that there's no denying that Jeff Carter's elite, and if only he didn't take as many nights off as he seems to, both in the regular season and playoffs, then you'd see a lot more from him. I think that his reputation was sullied by the thing that happened in 2011 with the Blue Jackets, though, eh?
Yeah.
I mean, he basically plays like a quarter of the season for them and demands a trade. I mean, that was pretty rough.
Yes, sir. All right, let's move on to the rest of the hockey world.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, we're going to talk about Vancouver. Canucks hired Jim Benning.
Naturally.
Canucks hired Jim Benning. What do you think?
Well, I think he was the best candidate. I think he was probably the only candidate in Lindon's books. People look at his record of being a hockey guy. He was in Buffalo when they drafted guys like Ryan Miller and Pominville and Vanek. And then he went to Boston and was there for the drafting of Krejci and Lucic and Marchand and all these guys who were key parts of the team in the past couple seasons. So he has a good amateur scouting record. You know, he's never been a GM before, so I don't know in terms of his professional scouting what that's going to work out to. But, I mean, he seems like a no-nonsense, no BS kind of guy. If you watch that Behind the Bee documentary thing, when they're talking about trading
Behind
Tyler Seguin.
The Bee.
Behind the Bee. It sounds like
that's a movie I downloaded last night illegally, I think.
I bet he streamed it. But they were talking, it was him and Shirelli, and they were sitting around a table with the Bruins brass, and they were talking about trading Seguin before the draft last year. And Benning was basically really no nonsense about it. He was like, yeah, you know, Sagan's a fast player for us in the regular season. And he was basically driving it. So he seems like a no BS kind of guy. Yeah. So I like it because the Canucks are a team that has had far too much BS in their management in the last little while.
And so who does he hire as a coach? It sounds very much like Barry Trotz is in the mix, or is a front runner, really.
Well, Trotz interviewed in Washington yesterday, and it seems like everyone wants him. He's a hot commodity. It must be the lack of neck. Teams love to hire that little bowling ball and stick him behind the bench. I don't know what kind of coach he is, man. I mean,
well, the thing, he's very good with the players he has. That's what it looks like. He turned the team in Nashville into a second-round team.
After 12 seasons. After 12 seasons.
Sure, but he had Sergei Kostitsyn as his leading goal scorer. I think he had to lock it down and play defensively because he was given Pekka Rinne, Shea Weber, Ryan Suter.
See, but there were seasons where he was given, you know, Shea Weber, Ryan Suter, Dan Hamhuis, Kimmo Tiimonen, Marek Zielecki, Peter Forsberg. Like, he had good teams a couple seasons, and he was never able to elevate those teams. I don't know. You know, you ask me, I like John Stevens for the job.
Mm-hmm.
I think he deserves another chance. I think that Willie Desjardins getting a lot of play, too. A guy out of the Dallas Stars farm system head coach. He coached Team Canada, the World Juniors, 1 year. He's a veteran coach, but I lean towards Stevens, I think. I don't think Trotz is a championship coach, man.
No, I tend to agree with you there. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. Pittsburgh, quiet thus far.
Yep.
But the rumor going on Twitter is that one of their candidates is Pierre Maguire.
That is amazing. Oh, that would be spectacular. Well, you know that he would ship Marc-Andre Fleury out of there faster than you could say Double D on.
Oh my God. Could you imagine the draft? They would take 15 minutes to select.
Because he missed the guys junior team.
At 15th overall, the Pittsburgh Penguins are proud to select. He was born in Wisconsin Hospital. Went to elementary school for 3 years in middle of Green Bay there. Then he switched over because his dad kind of lost his job for a bit. But then they got back on track. Went played junior up in, oh my God.
15, he totally would.
15 minutes at the podium and everyone's just snoring. And then he goes, we're proud to select. And then no one cheers.
And then it would be super awkward if he drafted the kid. And then like he did with Tatician, the kid was standing up there and he told the kid that he liked him because he's a player with a big stick. Classic Pierre. Oh my God, but I mean, look, the guy knows just an absolute shit ton about hockey. So he would not be a bad
If I
fan.
Knew anything as much as Pierre Maguire knew hockey, I would be rich and famous.
Yeah, you'd be good at that anything.
Oh my sure. God. Yeah. Hey, World Championships update.
So let's talk about the draft.
That's the draft. Right.
World Championships.
I don't know. Canada's winning 2-1 against Finland right now. It'll be over by the time this podcast is over. No one really cares. Moving on.
No. Yeah. I wanted to touch on the draft quickly if you could, though, because I think that that's going to be an important thing for us to talk about between now and June. First overall, Florida Panthers. Who do you got?
I don't know. They say they're shopping their pick. The Canucks say they're moving. Lots of people say they want to move up in the draft. It's kind of one of those drafts where it's not a Taylor versus Tyler. It's not a one person that is locked to go first or second. It seems like it's kind of open. And so, I mean, if we're driving the Canucks bus, for sixth overall, this is a pretty good draft for it to be sixth overall because it looks kind of even at the top. So I don't know. I mean, Reinhart? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that if Florida keeps it, which is, like you're saying, up in the air, they probably look at a guy like Ekblad because they do need young defense moving forward. But I think that if a team is going to try and jump up, you say a team like Vancouver, they would have to look at a guy like Sam Reinhart being a local boy. I also really think that there is some talk and some consideration that a team like Calgary could possibly move up because they want to look at a guy like Reinhart or Sam Bennett to play up front. The one team that I think should really be considering moving down is the Oilers. Third overall, they don't need another young kid. They need to trade that pick to a team like San Jose that's willing to deal a solid roster player for it.
I agree. It'll be interesting leading up. When is the draft? Is June 23rd?
It's probably somewhere around there.
Somewhere around there.
I only really know. Yeah, I start really paying attention to it when Bobby Mack starts posting his egghead rankings.
Bobby Mack. Yeah, sweet. All right. Well, a World Championships update. No one still cares. And moving on to the NBA.
All right, we'll move on to the NBA because Paul and I are still going to be driving the NBA bus until we get one of his many vaunted American basketball
superstar. Yeah, I do have a guy coming on. I got a guy.
I wanted to talk to you first about everyone's favorite team to shit on.
Miami Heat.
The San Antonio Spurs.
Oh, sorry.
No one likes the San Antonio Spurs, do they?
They're starting to get it. Do you see the video that's going around, that's going viral, of the Spurs make basketball beautiful? It's just them.
No, I didn't see
it's
that.
It's just them passing the ball a lot and then scoring. I mean, it is pretty basketball. And another nice play last night. A lot of nice plays last night. They're dominating the Thunder. Kevin Durant can become the first MVP to get knocked out in the second round since Magic Johnson in 1989. Spurs doing well, or is it KD not showing up? He had some laughable gaffes on defense last night.
Well, and he called himself out, too, didn't he?
Yeah, well, so did Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, that's true. I just learned not to, go against the Spurs anymore. A 112-77 demolition of a team like the Thunder just shows that San Antonio, with Popovich, Duncan, Parker, Ginobili as their core. And I mean, I know they got guys that they're building around that core, but really when people talk about the Spurs and think about the Spurs, those are the guys that they focus on. They just know how to win, man. Mm-hmm. They do. And it's, I agree with you. I think they do play beautiful basketball. I think there's a lot that's beautiful about the fact that they're able to win every year for going on like 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that has to be more special. I know that people hate on them because Duncan isn't a glamorous guy or whatever, but you know, I think that you have to consider what he's done in his career.
How was that?
That was an ad on NBA.com. You know, it's probably an ad about Tim Duncan. But the guy, the guy has never endorsed a shoe. The guy has never, you know, done a commercial for Icy Hot Backpatch. And he never will. But he only wins basketball games, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot to like about him.
No, he's the quiet, do your job, get out, don't talk, anything. They are the ultimate,
exactly.
Their ultimate team, I think. Since the, 2000 and whatever Patriots that only had Tom Brady and no one else? The ultimate team kind of game they play.
Yeah, no, I agree. And Tim Duncan's a Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I just don't think he doesn't get enough respect. I've always kind of thought that, and it's because he's not a glamorous kind of guy, and he's from the U.S. Virgin Islands, and... You know, whatever. It goes back to Greg Robinson, or David Robinson, I guess, when he was drafted. But
mm-hmm. Well, the Spurs are not favored to win Game 3. Oklahoma's favored by 2 points to win Game 3. In the other series, Miami's favored by 7 points to win Game 3.
And yeah, it's intense.
I'm looking at the to win series. Here we go. Miami Heat favored... 1.23, Indiana at 4.25. Paul George out with a concussion, apparently.
Yeah,
I saw that. If that's that, then goodbye, Indiana. San Antonio favorite to win versus the Thunder, 1.09.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma at 8. Yeah, I think a Spurs-Heat matchup is inevitable.
I think it looks pretty much likely now, doesn't it? I mean, I really did think the Pacers would be able to give the Heat a run for their money, and they did. First two games, they did. But if they don't have Paul George, Roy Hibbert can only do so much as a one-man show for that team.
There's a funny narrative of Roy Hibbert, who is completely useless against 28 teams, and against the Heat, he's absolutely dominant.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He
the man knows when to step up to the plate, I guess.
I guess he can only play against the top team.
I guess so.
So the NBA's big story from Saturday night, what the heck am I talking about?
Yeah, it was like Monday night.
Was the draft lottery. Yep. The only time of the year Cleveland is good.
That's right, man. Now they have like a 1.9% chance. They didn't have that little, like, they used to, for like two straight draft lotteries, they had like some 10-year-old kid who I think was the owner's son or something. He was like a good luck charm for them, and he wasn't there, and they still won the draft lottery. Chances are, I think, and you'd probably agree with me, that they're going to look towards Andrew Wiggins, in which case they'd become essentially We the South. The Canadian NBA team with him and Anthony Bennett and Tristan Thompson. I think that seems like the most logical pick.
I don't know how you can go away from Andrew Wiggins. I mean... Mm-hmm.
I mean, Joel Embiid is a good player if you need a center, but I thought that's what they got Bennett for. They got Bennett to be a big guy.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And then Milwaukee will take the other one, basically.
There's talk about Jabari Parker, too, but I don't think the kid from Duke, but I don't think he's on Wiggins' level.
No. I think you're dumb if you don't take Wiggins. And then if you take Wiggins and you're Cavaliers... And you got Wiggins, Bennett, Kyrie Irving. You know, does LeBron think about it?
Well, I mean, if he wants to go back there and they're willing to welcome him back, as I'm sure they would be, it's a hell of a nucleus to build around. I mean, although Anthony Bennett, you know, people want to just, you know, people were rough on the kid last year. I mean, mm-hmm. There was that hilarious... JPEG or whatever, making fun of him when he got his career high 15-point game with the Wilt Chamberlain pitcher with the 100-point thing, and it had his face 15. In 15. Yeah. That was priceless.
That was great.
But I think he's still going to be a good player, and Wiggins looks dynamic, and Kyrie Irving, for all the attitude problems he seems to have, seems like a hell of a point guard, and he's got big skills. So if you add LeBron to that, you all of a sudden have a championship team, in my opinion, or at least a team that would be favored.
Yeah, I got a question for you in the buzzer beater about that.
Oh, baby.
Oh, baby. All right.
Okay. Your favorite session coming up right now.
Woohoo! The Major League of Boredom.
Let's go to the diamond. We'll just touch on it. We won't do too much. Don't worry. You can ask me a bunch of questions. I'll entertain the two people out there who care about baseball who are listening.
Okay. Why are the Cleveland Indians allowed to call their team that and the Washington Redskins not?
Oh, my God. Don't get me started.
Okay.
That has been a pet project of mine for years. They changed their logo, though. The predominant logo they have now on their hats and on their merchandise and stuff around the league is now the C. They've moved away from the chief, whatever the hell they call them, chief racism, frankly.
I think it's silly.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. Ah, oh, my God. I dropped my microphone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Live radio, folks. Live radio.
So... The BJs.
The BJs.
For our Canadian contingent.
Yep.
How are they doing?
They're doing good. I mean, they're tied with the Yankees right now atop the AL East division, which is really what that division is right now. For the first, I mean, entering the season, everyone thought that it would once again just be this powerhouse division. But right now, the team that's leading it, which is the Yankees, has the lowest winning percentage of any division-leading team in the league, and the Jays are tied with the Yankees. So.
Is that not how Toronto, the Raptors, won the division in basketball? They were just in
pretty
the worst
is.
One, and then were like 10 games above 500?
It pretty much is. So Toronto teams are benefiting from, you know, the shit division lottery. But, you know, to the Blue Jays' credit, they have been playing well lately. I mean, they're looking for the Fenway sweep today. Edwin Encarnacion, who I was given a bit of guff last time we talked about the Jays, he's had two straight multi-home run games, and I think the stat is that he has 7 home runs from his last 6 games or something like that. So he is...
he just can't miss.
No, the man is going yard now. And if you combine that with how well Bautista has been playing this year, they like the way that Brett Laurie has been playing. Melky Cabrera is hitting for solid average. And, you know, they actually got some arms with the way that Burley's playing and the way that Drew Hutchinson's kid's playing. And this is a year where the Blue Jays, you know, they can make progress. If the Red Sox are taking an off year and it looks like all the injuries the Rays have aren't going to help them, so they're probably going to be out of it. I mean, they only have one pitcher now. The Orioles are a wild card because I do still think the Orioles have a strong team, but it really does look like a 3-team race right now. And I know that on Bet365, if you were to go and take a look at division odds right now,
Yankees at 3.2 to win. Red Sox at 3.4.
Which is just silly.
And Blue Jays at 4.3.
Yes, sir. And I think that right now, I would hesitate. Those numbers aren't great for any team, really. The Orioles at 6 is actually pretty good value. But I would hesitate until, like I always say when we talk about baseball, the All-Star break is when you really start looking at the standings. And if I still see the Jays within, you know, 3 or 4 games of the division lead at the All-Star break, then, I mean, I'll start pushing people to look at them. As it stands right now, the AL West and the AL Central look like sure bets. I mean, the Athletics and the Tigers are going to wrap those up. But it should be fun in the AL East. It should be fun to watch down the stretch.
Yeah, my Mariners at 11-1.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that everyone, at least they're not the Astros at 500-1. But I think that everyone thought the Mariners would be a decent team coming into this year.
Yeah.
But a lot of that was only because of Robinson Cano and Corey Hart, and they've done their part. But the rest of the Mariners roster is whatever.
Severely lacking.
Yeah, they have Felix, and then what else?
They are not the 2001 Mariners of old.
No, they are not. Not that record-breaking team that somehow couldn't make it past the Yankees in the division series. I remember that series. So much heartbreak.
It killed me back when I played baseball, and I loved it.
Just sit down and actually start paying attention to it again. All you folks out there in podcast land, too, just sit down with your buddies or, you know, all my Vancouverites that are listening, go down to a game at Safeco Field, watch a game. You'll love it. It's the best way to spend an afternoon.
You know, I went because I'm in Toronto. Well, not now, but I was in Toronto in the summer and I went.
A little Globes trotter.
I went to go watch the Blue Jays game. And I had realized I'd never seen a professional baseball game before. And it was it was quite fun. And it was great.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not the most – it's not hockey. It's not basketball. And, you know, North American minds love hard-hitting, fast-paced sports.
Definitely.
But like, shit, it cost like $10 and it was great.
Exactly. You sit down with your buddies, you get some cheap beers, cheap hot dogs. It's a great afternoon out.
Yeah. No, it's
it always is.
Yeah.
You get your Bet365 app, you listen to our podcast on the way down. Like, it's a great way.
Yeah.
To
spend all 5 minutes we spend on.
Exactly. And moving on
to soccer. Football.
Yes. Well, I promised in the last podcast that we would talk more directly about the World Cup in a more regimented, specific manner. And so that's what we're going to do today. We talked about Group A and about Brazil running away with that group, which obviously they're going to do. Today is Group B, and this is going to be a much more interesting group, frankly.
Yes.
I mean, just to start with the fact that you have the Australians, clearly the... Oh, wait, no, I misread that. I was reading it alphabetically. You have Spain and Holland. You have the two teams who faced off in the World Cup final in 2010 mm-hmm. in the same group together, mm-hmm. playing each other on the second day. I mean, that's going to be awesome.
That is going to be great. Spain and Netherlands, June 13th. Yeah, yep. it's gonna decide the group, really. Bet365 says that Spain is going to win. They are
the odds?
1.72 to win the group. Sorry, not the game. 3.5 for Holland.
Okay.
Chile at 5, and then Australia at 34, down in the depths of the Great Barrier Reef, go their odds.
That's right. Yeah, they have dangerous sharks and dangerous snakes, but they don't have a dangerous football team. Oh, God. We went from French accents to Australian accents.
All right, I'm going to put some shrimp on the barbie, eh?
No, God. But you said that Chile at 5-1, and that may throw people off. But I wanted to talk about Chile a little bit because people are talking about Spain and Holland.
I love Chile; it's so good. You get like some pepper in there, and
it's delicious. But in actuality, Chile has a team. Not just as a fine, you know, Portuguese dinner dish. They have an outstanding nucleus of three players when I look at Alexis Sanchez, Eduardo Vargas, and Arturo Vidal. And for people who might not be as familiar, Sanchez plays for Barcelona, Vargas plays for Valencia, and Vidal plays for Juventus. And these are three guys who are really good players on top club teams in the world, frankly. Chile, in order for them to get out of this group, which I would not suggest by any means, not with Spain and Holland, you know, the best thing that could happen for Chile would be for Spain and Holland to draw in that first game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, neither of them gets 3 points, and Chile walks Australia. Then all of a sudden, all Chile needs to do is, you know, at least draw their next two games or win one, and then they qualify.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know how likely a Chile win against Spain or Holland is. I mean, I wouldn't put it as very likely, but I do think that you need to consider them at 5-1. I don't know what the odds are for them to qualify. Are there odds for them to qualify to that group, or is it just to win?
Hold on. I'm looking at top team goal scorer.
That's cool.
Well, while I'm here, I can't remember my alphabet. There we go. Alexis at 3.25.
Yeah.
Vargas at 5. Vidal at 5.5. And then after that,
I'd look at Vidal at 5.5 for that. He's Juventus' guy, and 5.5 is great value for him, and their offense is going to flow through him. He just doesn't have the name value of Sanchez.
You wanted to qualify?
Yeah, to qualify for the three big boys in that group.
Group qualification. Spain at 1.16, Holland at 1.61, Chile at 1.83.
See, that's not bad odds for any of the three of them. I don't know. I really thought that you'd get like two or three on Chile, but mm-hmm. maybe not. Give me your predictions. Give me your 1-4. Run it down.
Well, I'm going to go like I always do in the World Cup. I don't know. I think the good teams are the good teams for a reason, and I go Spain, Holland, Chile, Australia.
Okay.
I think the match to watch is not Spain-Holland, it's Spain-Chile.
Oh, yeah, no, I'd agree.
Because that could end up shaping both the tournament for both sides.
Yeah, is that the last match for the two teams? I think it is.
Let me
That's like see. The last group match, Let and then Holland see. Plays Australia.
Let me Pretty see. Sure. It is Holland-Chile is the last one.
Okay, well, that would be a good one, too. I just think that, look, I look at this group, and I wonder if this is the toughest group. I mean, everyone wants to look at Group D with Italy, Uruguay, and England, or Group G, obviously, with Germany, Portugal, the States, and Ghana. But there's something to be said for this Group B. I mean, Australia is a throwaway team. Sorry, Aussie transplants. But those are three top 10 teams that you have there in Group B. So,
yeah. So this is interesting. You can do group forecast on Bet365. This is what I love about the World Cup. The amount of things you can bet. Group B, so you can bet who's going to come first, who's going to come second, basically.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, I see. Oh, so it's got like the permutations and stuff.
Yes. So you got 12 choices for every group.
Yeah.
Spain first, Holland second. The consensus pick, 3-1.
Three, okay. Yep.
Holland first, Spain second, 5.5. Yep. And actually a better odd than that is Spain first, Chile second at 4.3.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then where is – do they not have Holland first, Chile second there at 12-1?
Okay.
So – yeah. So it's
I almost
– up in the air. Australia first, Chile second is at 201-1, if you're interested.
I am not going to take that bet, although sometimes the World Cup surprises you. But out of all those group forecast odds, man, I think probably the one that I look at that could really surprise people, I look at Chile first, Spain second at 8.5.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I know that Chile first is a weird suggestion, but strange things happen in the group stage of the World Cup. Sometimes teams, favored teams, play down to their competition or don't, you know, gel as quickly as they would like to. Mm-hmm. Whereas a team like Chile, I mean, they have a lot of guys who play on the same team in the Spanish league. I don't know. I can see them gelling faster, but it'll be interesting regardless. Yeah. I think that's definitely a group to watch. It'll be a more exciting group than Group A, which is Brazil and everyone else.
Yeah. Now this is Group D, which is two podcasts from now, but have you heard the Luis Suarez news?
No, I don't think so.
He's having surgery on his knee, and he's very doubtful for the World Cup.
Oh, wow.
So now the only reason I bring this up now is because if you are betting, they have not updated the odds yet. Finish first in the group, Uruguay to finish second is still the consensus pick. So if you are thinking England and Italy, get your bets in now before they take down the Uruguay odds, if they do. He's doubtful for the World Cup, they said. I mean, I don't know how you recover from knee surgery if you're a soccer player in a month.
In a month, yeah.
So he is having surgery on the meniscus in his knee. And so, I mean, if you look, let's just do it quickly here. Where is
Without him, they haven't published their roster yet, but without Suarez, I really wonder.
Group betting.
Uruguay has the strike force to do well.
I mean, this looks like the closest group in all of them. This is closer than the group. Yeah, this is definitely the group of death, according to Bet365. Italy at 2.62. Uruguay at 2.75. England at 3.1. If you want to get that England bet in before it's inevitably going to go down. Down as in like better worse odds.
Yeah, that's right.
Then get it in now.
Well, I think that's a good suggestion, Paul, because Uruguay without Luis Suarez, I mean, they have a questionable attack. And although I'm not crazy about England's roster, nor am I crazy about Italy's roster, frankly, and don't even get me started on Costa Rica, there is no reason to think that Uruguay without Suarez is a better team than those two.
Yeah. Well, we have some time.
They might not even be a better team than Costa Rica.
No. Let's look at some fun bets. We got a little bit of time here. Let's look at some fun bets here.
All right.
Winner's
group.
So they say the winner is going to come from – they say the winner is going to be Brazil, basically. Group A at 3.75 is the top one. Group F at 5. Who's in Group F?
Is that not the group of death with Ghana, the States, Germany, and Portugal? I think that is.
I'm looking through – right now, Group F. No, Group F is Argentina.
Oh, that makes sense. Then who else is in that group?
Bosnia, Iran, and Nigeria. So they think Argentina. Then Group B, Spain or Holland at 5.5.
Yeah,
I would bet there if I'm betting now. You got two chances. Group G at 5.5 as well. That's the Portugal, Germany. Group D after that at 10, and then it just wavers after that. So that's a fun little bet if you want to. These are all like, you know, big, long odds, basically.
These are, yeah.
This is a fun one, too. This is more kind of obvious, but it's fun to cheer, you know, the opposite. To finish bottom of the group.
Oh, is that one?
Cameroon at 1.72 in Group A. Australia, obviously, in Group B at 1.28. Group C, so this is when it gets interesting, because you can talk about the best team, but you can also talk about who's going to be the worst. Group C is the group of death for the bad teams. You got Greece, Japan, Ivory Coast, and Colombia.
Oh, brother, we're talking about that one on Saturday, too. I'm not sure we're going to be able to cover 10 minutes on that group.
No.
Another fun one, too, that I'm looking at is continental betting. And continental betting is the top teams, top South American, European, CONCACAF, African, Asian, Oceanian teams. That's always a fun thing.
Because you can bet, it's basically a choice between Brazil and Argentina or Spain, Holland, Germany.
Well, or Belgium, they're at 7, your favorite Belgium. Little underdogs, the Belgians.
How about the Golden Ball? Let's end with this. The Golden Ball, they have Neymar at 7-1 to win it. Let's just I'll name the top 6 here. Neymar at 7-1, Messi at 8-1, Cristiano Ronaldo at 10-1. It seems a stretch to put him at 10-1. That assumes that Portugal is going to go pretty far. Iniesta at 21-1, Frank Ribery at 21-1. And Marco Reus at 21-1.
Neymar's never been in one of these tournaments before, so I don't know how he's going to perform.
Yeah.
Messi still has yet to have an amazing tournament with the Argentines. Ronaldo, I mean, you put him on Brazil and you go with him every time.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this list right now, and I mean, I wonder if a little further down the list...
Oh, this is where you get good.
Yeah, I mean, you get some long bets here. Mesut Ozil is a solid bet at 26. Sergio Aguero, Kun Aguero out of Argentina at 26 is a good bet, too. Another guy who I look at, and I mean, this is really dependent on whether you think he's even going to start or not, but I think he'll start 41 odds on Thomas Müller for Germany. Mm-hmm. And there's talk that he is the favored starter for the Germans, not Marco Reus. And, I mean, in Euro, Thomas Müller tore the whole tournament apart. So it's going to be interesting to see how he does. 41 is good odds on him. This thing tends to be won by, you know, guys who you don't expect.
Can
so,
someone tell me how... Am I reading this wrong?
Go for it.
Didier Drogba at 151-1.
Yep.
Gianluigi Buffon at 100-1. Is that a joke or is that real?
No, I don't know. That's hilarious.
Miroslav Klose, 100. They put Klose and Buffon at the same odds as Wesley Sneijder, David Luiz, Paulinho, Fernando Torres.
And they got some real solid players on there, too. Like
Joe Hart. Joe Hart is
on
there.
Yeah, I know. They got a guy like Daniel Sturridge, who, if England does something, will be a big part of that. Or David Luiz. Or Andre Schürrle, or Yaya Touré, actual players at the same odds as a goalie to win the Golden Ball. So they're dicking around.
We'll wrap that up. We're gonna go through those on Saturday definitely because you know Colombia to win Group C and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's about right.
Let's do the buzzer beater.
Everyone loves the buzzer beater. I've been getting countless emails to dpsportspodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Talking about the buzzer beater. It's, you know, people's favorite segment since the lightning round and Family Feud.
Pretty much. All right. You ask me first or I ask you first? No, you ask me first because my last question is a doozy.
Okay. Well, I think the doozies are the way to go. And I will ask you my 10 questions starting... Now, is PK right? Is Henrik Lundqvist lucky?
No.
Will Marian Gaborik be a Los Angeles King next season?
Ooh, yes.
Where will Thomas Vanek play next year?
I think they'll re-sign him. Montreal.
Okay. Are you sick about hearing how underrated Corey Crawford is?
Yes.
Is Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili the best threesome of all time?
Of all time, yes.
Okay. Is Anthony Bennett the worst first overall pick of all time?
Just because I can't remember other ones, I'll say no, but I know there's worse ones.
Yeah, like Kwame Brown.
Yeah.
If the Toronto Blue Jays made the playoffs, would you care?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Spain or Holland?
Spain.
What is your favorite kind of chili?
Portuguese chili.
Boy, what does that got in it? Like, give the folks a little bit more in-depth.
I don't know. Portuguese chili? I don't know. I've never made it. Fish, wine, hairy arms, and... Yeah.
hairy arm hair, and back fat.
A shoelace from Chris Jenner and all those...
That's right. Bald man's hair wax.
There you go. And
then in honor of number 10, in honor of this being the V. Stiviano podcast for today, why did the Donald Sterling cross the road?
Because his girlfriend tricked him?
Yeah, that's... I would have also accepted because he saw a black man on his side of the road.
Podcast just took a turn.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? We're not liable for anything that we say here.
Okay, here we go.
All right.
We got Ted. I have no funny ones, but the last one is a multi-layered question.
Oh, I love multi-layered things. Seven-layered dip.
Oh, it's almost as good as Portuguese chili.
With the hair and stuff?
It's good. You learn to love it after you get past, like, the first 15 bites. All right.
It's because of all the wine.
You just get drunk.
I want to have dinner at your house when we get back to Van. All right, that's gonna happen.
Okay, we'll make a podcast as we cook chili. Remember when
Paul's dad arm deep in chili?
Remember when we were gonna go to the World Cup?
Oh my God! Start your questions.
Okay, number one: does Wiggins go first in the draft?
Yes.
With three first overall picks in the last 4 years, plus Johnny Manziel coming to Cleveland, does Cleveland become a contending sports city in a few years?
No, because they'll all ask for trades, and Johnny Manziel will just do what Brady Quinn did, which was suck.
French Open on Sunday. Rafa's tourney to lose?
Well, I mean, Djokovic beat him last time they played.
On clay?
You know, not on clay, though. I guess, yeah, if it's clay, it's Rafa's.
If the Blackhawks win the cup, are they considered a dynasty?
Yeah, almost definitely.
If Montreal has Carey Price and no PK Subban, are they still down 2-0?
Probably, although PK hasn't been as dynamic as he was in round two.
Luis Suarez injury, Uruguay useless?
Pretty much.
An 11-year-old playing at the Women's U.S. Open in golf. Good for the game or bad for it?
Look, I mean, where's Michelle Wee? Somebody tell me where Michelle Wee is, all right? It doesn't matter. Like, this is such a gimmick.
Should other leagues have no age limit?
Well, I mean, they don't really have an age limit in European football leagues, but some other leagues do. So I would say, no, I think if you're good enough at 16, then you should be in there.
Would you rather... This is number 9. Would you rather be a good player on a bad team, like John Tavares, or a bad player on a good team, like Sean Thornton?
I'd rather be a good player on a bad team, because then I get all the ladies.
Like 11-year-olds at the U.S. Open.
Wow.
Number 10. Here's my multi-layer question. It's actually a bracket.
Okay, go.
This is to find out Dan's most unbreakable sports record.
Oh, wow.
Between, this is your first matchup, Usain Bolt's 9.59 100-meter dash and Wayne Gretzky's 215 single-season point record.
Gretzky.
Between Pete Rose's most hits all time of 4,256 or Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game.
Chamberlain.
Bill Russell's 11 rings or Nolan Ryan's 7 no-hitters.
Russell.
Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak, or Cal Ripken, or Brett Favre's consecutive games played.
Ripken. Oh, Ripken, without a doubt. All right. How do you do that?
All right. So then we have, you said Gretzky. So Gretzky's single-season point record of 215, and Chamberlain's 100-point game.
Gretzky.
And then we have, who did you say? Bill Russell?
Russell.
You said Bill Russell's 11 rings versus Cal Ripken's consecutive games played.
Cal Ripken.
So then we have in the finals Wayne Gretzky's 250 points in a single year or Cal Ripken's consecutive games, which will never be broken.
You know, I don't care what people say about baseball. It's a hard sport to play. It is hard to play any sport. I don't care if you're playing competitive friggin' darts at a at the professional level, at as high of a level as Cal Ripken did for as long as he did. I mean, the man, he was never like a superstar hitter, superstar player by any means, but the fact that he was able to stand in and play, I don't even, what is his record again?
2,632.
Think about that. Just think about that. It's Cal Ripken. He didn't want it. He didn't ever want to take a day off.
That's more ingredients than Portuguese chili.
I know. That's more hair on the back of a fat Portuguese man.
That is more. 2,000. That is more missed shots in a World Cup than Cristiano Ronaldo.
Exactly. 2,632. Not once did he come in hungover.
That's
and
how many
ask,
racist
you know,
remarks Donald Sterling made.
Exactly. Just name it. You're exactly. And he made 19 consecutive All-Star games because of it. Look, that is a record that is incomprehensible in professional sports. Not even someone who was on the juice 24/7 injecting it into their eyeballs could have played 2,632 consecutive games.
That's great. With that, we wrap it up for today.
We do. This has been a delightful, mostly accent-free edition of the DP Sports Podcast. Folks, please email us with suggestions. We're still looking for a permanent name. DP Sports Podcast will not be allowed on iTunes, I'm quite certain. So if you have a name that's better than that, send it in, dpsportspodcast@gmail.com. You can also like follow us on Twitter. Paul is at Paul Almeida. You want to spell that for the folks?
PaulAlmeida22.
Yeah, that's his at, and my at is at Dan the Max, DanTheMacs. You can follow us on Twitter. No one really follows me because I don't tweet, but if you guys start following me, I will. And other than that, we will be back on Saturday with another exciting edition. We will talk about the group of anti-death, the group of eternal life. Maybe we'll talk about how Corey Crawford is either underrated or overrated. We might actually stop being bitter Canucks fans and talk about Alain Vigneault's success. We'll definitely talk about baseball. Ugh. And
I don't think I'm showing up on Saturday.
So I'll go solo. That way fewer people will be offended. All right, dpsportspodcast@gmail.com, and we will see you folks on Saturday.
See ya!